Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire at MLSsoccer.com. I am David Goss. Joining me today, Matt Doyle, as well as the only man out of Oakland that I ever need to talk to, Kalen Carr, carrying the city pride. How's it going, guys?
Great.
It's going good, man. Are we not your partners in soccer? Or is that strictly an Andrew Wiebe thing?
It's such a corporate setup. Like, just my idea is like, it's just way more like you guys float in, you float out, we work, we don't work. It's whatever. I don't need everyone to have a title because then you've got job responsibilities.
Hey, more of a total football type of thing. That's your approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like a tech guy. I'm going to save the world one day with the way I organize things. I'm totally different from the past before I bring everything down with me. Excited for today's show, though. A huge stadium opening in Cincinnati. New stadium, same result, but we're going to get into it. It'll be fun.
Is Wiebe still at the march to the match? Where's he at right now?
Yeah. Wiebe got stuck in the march. Didn't even make it to the game. Actually doesn't even know if there's a team in the city.
And the Higuain brothers are here, though. The Higuain brothers are here.
You guys, I watched this game with my family because we are all vaccinated and we were able to celebrate my mom's birthday in person, which was so excited. Nice. And I was like, should I tell them? Should I not? And they hugged on one of the goals and turned and someone said, you look like one of them. But they thought I looked like Gonzalo, which is totally off because I don't have the beard. So it's family chaos right now in the Higuain household. Congratulations to them, though. Huge goals, huge moment for them. We're going to do way too early MLS MVP predictions, which I'm assuming Gonzalo and Federico Higuain are on both your lists. So we'll get to that. And play a little contender pretender as we've got some teams that have really jumped out to some early leads in the standings and some surprises, some not. Some performances have been good, some haven't. And so I'm excited for all of that before we get there. Of course, the call-up coming out tomorrow. Danita Johnson from DC United is going to be their guest, so that's going to be an awesome episode. Matt Doyle wrote, I think, like 200, 300 words about MLS this weekend. Pretty strong article. Any pitch you want to give on it?
No, it's just the usual Sunday night article. It just only covers 27 teams. You know, goes through the entire weekend. Nothing in there you really want to dig through.
I feel like last night at about midnight, you were probably thinking, you know what? I need three more teams in this league to cover.
Absolutely.
On a weekly basis. And then, of course, if you haven't listened to it yet, last Thursday, Andrew Wiebe did a phenomenal interview with Sean Davis, who's been killing it for New York Red Bulls, and his past and his family's past in this country, as well as a lot of other interesting topics. So make sure you check that out. And when you talk about this weekend and when you talk about soccer, we have our Continental Tire celebrating soccer moment. And it is this: Atlanta United, they love to have a big crowd in that stadium, and they can finally do it once again. Over 40,000 fans, the largest crowd at a soccer game in the world since the COVID-19 pandemic hit and really restricted fans. Vaccinating is very good for you, and we hope that everyone out there is getting it done and getting your friends and families there as well so all of us can return to some level of normalcy. But Atlanta huffed and puffed throughout this game. They score the late equalizer. I saw it was your face of the week.
Late winner.
Yeah, sorry, late winner. Marcelino Moreno gets the goal off the header, and it felt very Atlanta United. A headed goal in off the post, and the fans just went wild. You could hear the train horns going. Everyone's jumping all over the place. A lot of the players ran to the supporters section to celebrate right in front of them. I felt chills at home. It felt cool.
It did. I mean, it looked cool as well. Like, the energy of the moment came through the screen. And that was necessary because the energy of the previous 93 minutes was not great. And Marcelino Moreno, getting that goal. This guy wears the number 10, and he has been on the struggle bus basically since he arrived in Atlanta. So for him to get that you could see it on his face, man. He was literally crying tears of joy and relief. And maybe that unlocks something for him. Maybe that is the moment that he needs to settle in and start delivering like what they thought. Like, he's not a DP this year. They were able to buy him down, but he arrived as a DP. They gave him the number 10 shirt. They kind of gave him the keys to the midfield. That didn't work out. Now Gabriel Heinze is using him more as an inverted winger. That hasn't been great. But hopefully for Atlanta, hopefully this was it. This was the turning point. And, I mean, frankly, they kind of need a turning point. Even though they're, like, at or near the top of the Eastern Conference, they just haven't looked good in any single way. So to have this, it really was a big moment for them and a little bit of heartbreak for CF Montreal, of course.
The way they've played under Heinze, you know that they would have kept pushing, throwing numbers forward. But, Kalen, it felt like the 93rd minute winner – like the crowd really pushed them through that. You could feel the energy in the building leading into it. Similar in Minnesota as well, where you could feel the energy in that building and then it kind of pushed them to a late winner there. But we've talked a million times about what does fans mean? What does it mean when they're in the building? What's the reaction? But you could see that it affected the way Atlanta was able to close this game out and get the win.
Yeah, I do think that supporters can make a difference as far as, especially late in matches, the last, you know, 10, 15 minutes to push you on. And, the crowd there, we're so used to hearing sort of like, I'm used to watching matches and being like, is this real crowd noise? Is this, you know, is it silent? And this was like, it felt like sort of surreal because you could hear the roar leading up to it. And then the eruption when the goal came was fantastic. I know we want to see that more and more at matches. And like, you get little glimpses of it, you know, Haglund's equalizer. That was sadly for them short-lived, but just like seeing him celebrate with kind of like that sort of reciprocity of the fans looking back at him was awesome to see. And we're getting little bits of those moments, and that can really make a difference for, especially for teams that are still in flux or finding themselves, which I think there's a lot of teams across MLS. Yeah. I think sort of the knock-on of 2020 is that there's new managers and new players still that are really still finding their foot, a long layoff, of course. And so I think for Atlanta and Heinze, it's like, even though they're not quite at their best yet, and, you know, Joseph is looking, I don't know, not quite the same still. There's a couple plays in the box where you would just expect him to kind of find it a little quicker, be a little bit more ready, and then finding it. And then he's having to drop off and try and facilitate at times, which is unnatural for him. So I think for Heinze, though, to get that emotional lift and for the confidence of the team, that was big. Same thing for Inter Miami, getting a little bit of that sense of belief. We've seen the Galaxy be able to really ride that in waves as well, too. So especially for teams in flux, if you can get fans back in stadiums, I think it can really begin to give a little bit of extra life and push to see some results and points.
So, Kalen, let me ask you this, because obviously Joseph is still on the way back from his ACL tear. We saw he got the first goal of his return last week. This week, I thought he was moving better. I really did. Like, he had a couple of those sort of patented Joseph headers where he is somehow at 5'7", somehow able to rise out of the crowd and get his head to a ball that you would think is just going to be eaten up by the center backs. And he did that twice in this game. And the first one, he missed pretty badly. The second one, I think it took a little deflection right before it got to him, so he ended up kind of skying that one as well. But I'm kind of a glass half full approach to that, because like 2 weeks ago, he wasn't even rising up for that. Now he's rising up. He's not finishing, but he's like, he's at least being a threat, getting his head to the ball and kind of being a problem in those situations. And then we've also seen under Heinze sort of the same thing that we saw under Frank de Boer, which is Joseph's dropping back more and playmaking a little bit. Like, he's releasing the wingers, and the wingers just aren't really doing anything with it. So, like, I don't know. I'm kind of encouraged by what I saw from Joseph this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and it does take time. I thought it was going to be a much quicker snap back for him.
He seems superhuman, right? Joseph seems superhuman, yeah. So we all assumed he would just walk back on the field and score 30 goals again.
Exactly, and I think it's been a little – they've been smart as far as kind of managing his minutes early on, and then now it's like, okay, you feel comfortable for him to go from the start, but – there's still just those couple plays, like you're saying, the headers where you're expecting that to go in, or you're expecting there were just a couple scrambles in the box that the ball usually kind of finds him, or he's able to find those spots and then put it away. And it just seemed maybe a step slow, or not slow, but just not quite that, you know, that sort of sense where he was going to be able to find it and put it away. And so I think it's still going to take a little bit of time for him, but you have to look at those things as a positive where it's like, all right, yeah, you're seeing him leap more. You're seeing him challenge for plays in behind a little bit more, and make some runs. Now, I guess the hope would be that Barco comes back and is able to be a little bit more of a facilitator, to kind of drive sort of right at the heart of the back line, so Joseph doesn't have to drop off as much. But we've seen mixed moments from him. So until then, I think Joseph, you know, it's never a good sign, I think, when you see a number nine dropping too far back. And we've seen a little bit more of that, just frustrating trying to get touches. Ultimately, you want to see him as far up, you know, on the back shoulder, looking to get in behind.
Joseph needs to get sharp, because my man George Bellows throwing dimes out there, and he needs those stats. He's a young guy. You got to start to build him. Julian Gressel got a lot of stats for hitting the same cross that Bellows hitting from the left side. And my guy needs those stats. One last celebrating soccer moment. We talked about Minnesota. Two Wonderwalls this week. Seems to be a bit more fun for them. They took 5,000 shots in this game. Reynoso's out here just – he's ready for the NBA playoffs. Why not? Just get him in ISO moment.
I love that. I saw Doyle called him it was like James Harden-esque in his column. I was like, yeah, that's a good shout.
It was like – it was completely heliocentric. Like everything – Minnesota took 27 shots. Ladero took 7 of them and then had the key pass, the pass that leads directly to the shot on 10. So, and like that's
Reynoso?
The most,
yeah. Or Nico Ladero.
What did I say? I said Ladero, but Reynoso, sorry. Had the key pass on 10 of them. That is the most that we have in our database in one game. It's one guy like either shooting or setting up 17 shots in one game. It was absurd. And like, it's kind of awesome because I love Reynoso. He's one of my favorite players in this league to watch. But it's also like, we have no other ideas. We have no other ideas here. And that's how you can badly outplay a team and end up needing kind of a miracle header, 4 minutes into second half stoppage time to get 3 points that were otherwise very well deserved.
I did not know he could backlift that quickly. Like, he rips shots out of nowhere at times and gets some power on it. The late goal for them, and the crowd went wild, and Wonderwall after. And it's been fun to watch over the last week in Minnesota, and we hope it continues for them. For FC Dallas, it's been tough. But I wanted to bring up one other moment for our celebrating soccer, which is Logan Ketterer, an extreme hardship loan for the Portland Timbers because 18 goalkeepers have gone down injured for them. And in the middle of this game with a 1-0 lead, he's standing a few yards away from Chris Wondolowski, the all-time leading goal scorer in MLS history, sitting on a potential game-tying penalty kick. And Logan Ketterer steps up and makes a huge save. And, like, played it pretty cool afterwards and was able to come out with the win. Nicholas Murray, who's a legend at USL, put out a tweet that said he has 5 PK saves for El Paso Locomotive, which is his parent club since 2019. So we all should have seen this coming, right? This is exactly what we should have put in our match previews going into the weekend.
I mean, it was a very MLS moment, right? It's one of the wonderful things about this league is that you could have a story like this. This guy has been a very good goalkeeper in the lower levels for a long time. He's 27 years old, so he's not a kid, and he had his chance, and he came out there in a game that really means something. Portland at San Jose really means something, and Wando in a goal-scoring position always means something, and he makes that save. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic, and I never get tired of stories like this.
It was awesome to see. Of course, Chicharito also had a penalty kick saved earlier in the day, so a good day for goal scorers to get penalty kick saved.
Chicharito, by the way, Chicharito is 12 of 24 all-time from the spot.
He should loan Logan Ketterer to his training center and take PKs against him that he can practice it. Let's get back to Cincinnati. TQL Stadium opening up a 3-2 loss for them against Miami. As we know, Andrew Wiebe's still in Cincinnati, so not here for this show. Won't be back next show as well. I think he's walking back from Cincy. The march takes you all the way from Cincy to KC. So it's going to be a while for him, and he can enjoy that. But for Cincinnati, Kalen, your boy Jeff Cameron got out there on the field finally. They went with two new center backs, a couple new pieces, of course, across this team. Kenneth Vermeer getting the start because he was so successful in LAFC, so you got to bring that in as you open your stadium. And they go down 2-0 really early. What did you see overall from Cincinnati? Because they then fight back to 2-2 and then lose 3-2 in the end.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was definitely, I think, probably the craziest game of the weekend. Just sort of a hodgepodge.
After all we just went through, there was still a crazy game out there.
I mean, this one was nuts. And look, I mean, part of it was the fact that FC Cincinnati literally has two new center back debutants who I think they trained one day. So they showed up, like shook hands, still probably learning players' names and supposed to be organizing the defense. And then also Vermeer as the goalkeeper makes his debut as well. So it's basically the most crucial part of the field where you need the most continuity and the most communication going up against Higuain, the Higuain brothers. So, you know, it didn't start off well, but I actually think that was more of the problem sort of landed to me still in a problem area, which is the defensive midfield spot. I just think they really struggle there. And I thought Phil Neville made a really good choice by going away from Rodolfo Pizarro and playing Pipa Higuain. Now, that was a tough choice because, I mean, everybody's been tempted to do this for the longest. I remember talking back even to DC United last year to say, can Pipa go from the start? Can you use him from the start? But he's just so good coming off the bench. And he was able to really find spots in transition to get in and around that, in front of that back line. And the outside backs also for FC Cincinnati, Madarita got caught up several times. You know, he has a tendency to kind of get dragged out of position. I think on the second goal, he's on the right side of the pitch and leaves a gaping hole on the left side. Joe Zhao gets beat on the ball and behind where he's disconnected from the center backs who've stepped. And then Breck Shea does a good job sort of stepping inside of him. Just not a natural right-sided player, at least in the defense, better going forward. So some big questions there for Cincinnati. I did like what I saw in moments from them. I guess from the big positive for me was Lucho Acosta coming back. I mean, he is just, I mean, we talk about opening a brand new stadium and entertainment value. Like, Cincinnati has not been a team I've been eager to watch play over time, as I think, you know, why we've given the fans so much, you know, credit for sticking through the team through these tough times. But I would show up and watch this guy play because he is fantastic to watch. I mean, just the way he's able to move and dance about and bump little 1-2s. But you also saw some of the issues that go with playing a player like that, where if you look at the decisive goal, yes, the big issue for me was the two center backs both had to go out at the 78th minute for Vallecilla, who Haglund comes in and immediately gets the goal. And then Jeff goes out because, you know, he's cramped and spent most of the match sort of covering for his outside backs and chasing down Lewis Morgan. And you know, that sort of, when you have to take out two substitutes for your center backs at sort of an end-to-end match, that stage of the game, it's always going to lead to problems. But the other issue was Harris Madunyanin comes in, and when you play Harris along, you're searching for a goal, you understand the substitution. But he's playing a little like 1-2 with Lucho Acosta in the middle of the pitch, and miscommunication, it goes wrong, and then suddenly it's coming right down your throat and you're stuck. Wait, you know, Haglund tries to make a desperation tackle, and then, you know, Jeff can barely walk at this point in the game. So there are fundamental problems with the defensive midfield position. I like Cruz, but he's more of like a ball hunting eight that can kind of up and down. But they have to sort that out, and I think they have to sort out the back line and get some continuity going. But I think there are some positives, Lucho being one of them, but he presents a problem and a possibility at the same time because he limits some of the decisions you can play, and you need people behind him to protect moments in transition.
Doyle, I want to ask Kalen a question about the stadium, but before, your Inter-Miami thoughts for them. Obviously, it was tough midweek. And then they come back, and as Kalen said, Rodolfo Pizarro, their biggest signing, doesn't get the start, and they get a pretty big win on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Pizarro really hasn't worked out as a number 10, because when that signing was made, all of us who watched Liga MX all said he's not number 10. And they look infinitely better with Pipa Higuain in that role, and Pipa's 36. That's a problem. I think.
Yeah, but I feel young.
Yeah, exactly. the central midfield wasn't great, but Gregory has been an upgrade. Central defense has been an issue. You know, Ryan Shawcross looks like a guy who maybe was thinking about retirement. It's not perfect, but I wouldn't even say it's good right now. But Gonzalo Higuain has been very good. And when your best player is very good, that gives you a lifeline. And the other thing is, like, the structure is just better and the buy-in is better from up and down the roster. Like, you could see it in the way these guys are carrying themselves, and you could see it in the level of organization. Not that they're particularly well organized. I mean, we saw what Montreal did to them last week, but like, they are much better organized than they were last year, and they're doing this in spite of dealing with a host of injuries to pretty useful players. But like, this roster, like, I mean, it's pretty clear that this roster is not done being overhauled. It's pretty clear that a lot of the signings that they made ahead of last year were not the right signings. And, you know, at this point, Phil Neville's just trying to kind of keep their heads above water and hope that the Higuain brothers can, find enough goals to sort of paper over the cracks that defense and that central midfield kind of leaves.
Which he's done. They're on 8 points, which is right in the middle of everything in the Eastern Conference playoff spot right now. That's what they want to be. They want to be able to play some course of the season from the front foot. You talk about those moves. It came out Matias Pellegrini is going to go back to Argentina. Obviously, that was part of the mess that they're still trying to work their way out of. Kalen, though, before we move on, I just wanted to ask, you've opened up stadiums with MLS teams before. For this FC Cincinnati group to go from a college football stadium where you're residents to where you're renting to your building now, and we saw how gorgeous TQL Stadium looked, and the fans are right on top of the game. The Bailey sounded loud. It's going to be pretty special. What goes on inside of a team, and how does it maybe change the way this team now operates or perceives themselves?
Well, it's awesome. I mean, you're giving me flashbacks to going from University of Houston, Robertson Stadium, where we shared it with the football team, and we'd have to move our gear out of the locker room on the weekends when there would be a football match. So you'd bring, it wasn't even really your space necessarily. We had awesome atmosphere, great crowds, but going to your own stadium is an amazing experience. And that feeling of playing on opening day, like the week leading up to it, you're fighting for your place in the team because you want to be a part of that first game and you want to be a part of those first moments. And that was the sort of heartbreaking part for Cincinnati, was that they kind of had that moment where they fell into a hole, but if they got out with the Hagelin goal, that's going to be a moment that I think you'd replay for, years and years to say, like, and it was something to build on, like a way to fight back and to show some spirit. And then it just kind of all crumbled and came apart, and that's kind of what they become used to there. So it you would look at this as a new opportunity. I do think we talked about the importance of getting fans in stadiums and supporters. I do think, especially for FC Cincinnati, if you've been there before, you've been there in the past, like, they really get a lift from their home fans. So as they begin to increase the capacity, and I think as the back line and the players get fit and a little situated, I do see a path forward for them, like I said. But the stadium looked, other than that, it just looked amazing. It just looked really awesome. I loved the, like, the skin on the outside of it and the march to the match, the drone shots, all that. I mean, it's everything that you could ever want. And I think it does change from feeling like you're kind of renting to buying, which, us as New Yorkers will never know. But it was awesome for them. And it's just disappointing, though, still, because this team is a team that's desperately searching for something to build off of. And I felt like to come back and even get a draw, the way that happened would have been a really big building point, but instead it's kind of like back down, and you have to build yourself back up again.
Somewhere in the world, inside of a march in Cincinnati, Andrew Wiebe dying to talk about real estate right now. So upset he's not on this show. For Cincinnati, they'll go on the road in their next game. Then they return in 2 weeks against New England, which should be a big one for them. But again, for all of us that love this league and have watched it for a while, I think it's still have to pinch yourself every once in a while when you see a stadium like this open up, an atmosphere like this. I don't know that we were ever sure that something like this would be possible. No. And we still got two more coming this season. Columbus opening up a new building, and Austin, it looks like QT Stadium is going to be pretty special. And they continue their road trip to lead into that one. Before we get to that, though, let's talk. This is Anders' narrative fun zone. I'm not a narrative guy. Andrew's not here. Anders stepping in for that. He wants to know contender or pretender. So we've got three teams in here that have done well so far this season. Maybe on the eye test, they haven't totally passed at all times, but on the results they have. And I want to know from the officials here. So you guys get the final word, although I guess maybe I'm the deciding vote if you don't agree. Contender or pretender for each of these teams.
Wait,
so I'm going to start.
Wait, before you do this, because you just said they maybe haven't passed the eye test.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be fair because I want to put this out there. The only team that's consistently passing the eye test at this point is Seattle. There are 26 teams in MLS that are like just like you watch them play. And this is not to say that they're bad. There's no difference between the bottom of the table and the top. But like even Philadelphia, you watch Philly play and they got themselves a good win this weekend. But you're like, ooh, they are just not able to exert any control over this game. Or the Galaxy, really good win this weekend. I think they're best of the year. But this was, and we've talked about this, David. We've talked about how the Galaxy don't really have a style at this point. They've been able to get to second in the standings by, you know, just being opportunistic and having the early season MVP leader. So saying they haven't passed the eye test, like, do you guys disagree with that? Is there anybody out there other than Seattle who's passing the eye test week after week?
No.
I like New England. And I feel like we haven't seen maybe the best of them yet, but they look the most kind of like solid or sure of themselves to me, as far as a team that has like you're saying, a clear identity, a way they want to play, Carlos Hill sort of running things in the middle. And then they cause a lot of problems, similar to the way that Philly did last year, with some of their athleticism and energy, and especially on the wings. New England has a ton of that, that really can impose their will on teams. And then you bounce it into the middle and you have that control of the ball through them. Now, the issue has been more who's their finisher. How do
seven goals in six games.
Yeah. How does that translate?
But they don't beat themselves, which gives you a high floor for what they're going to be over the course of this season. To Kalen's point.
Yeah, but they do feel, I will say, they do feel a distance from what we're seeing from Seattle right now. I agree. They are clearly far and away, you know, the best.
I would like to know how Anders set up whatever shock mechanism he has on Matt Doyle, because you just brought the show to a halt so you could compliment the Seattle
side.
Even though
contenders,
we have it in the rundown.
Look man, I just want to, like, I did not expect this from Seattle. Like, not only have they been dominant, they have been attractive to watch. And that has not always been the case for Seattle under either Brian Schmetzer or Ziggy Schmidt. And this team has been so much, like, I can't get over like how influential Christian Roldan is literally every second of the game in this role that he's playing, and how it ends up creating these attacking patterns. Like, I mean, we had another freaking wingback to wingback goal last night. Like, this is so much fun to watch. And it, like, I kind of hate it because Anders is just miserable in the group text every single week. But like, they're just far. And so when you say the eye test, right? Like that is the bar. That's what the eye test looks like. What the Sounders are doing, and just there's so much further along than any other team in MLS at this point. It's sickening.
Yeah, and for all the other mulligans that we're, you know, happy to hand out, where we're saying, oh, well, Columbus has been in a ton of, you know, CONCACAF Champions League games. They don't have Molino or Zella Rayan, or you look around and you say, oh, no Vela. But it's, if you go through that Sounders roster, right, it's not just Jordan Morris who's out, right? It's gone to Nico's played like 24 minutes the whole season. And then you've got Steph Fry who's out. And it's just like one after the next. And you're each time the next guy steps up, and it still looks the same. And yeah, Jordan Morris would have probably finished the one in the first half. But it's like you come back and the second half happens. And I mean, I thought Alex Roldan was
he's awesome. He's awesome. Game.
Yeah, he was so good. And the way Roldan, I think you're right that the way Roldan plays is giving them a huge lift. And it's kind of like a 3-4-1-2-ish where he's kind of just underneath. But I haven't seen a player kind of play that role where you're like beneath the strikers, but you're still able to kind of run into the wings and distance. I guess maybe Dero is the one guy where I've seen in early Dero kind of where he was able to really get out and into the channels where he has that freedom. But I think different players on the ball where Christian does a little more of his work, you know, running to space and then also defensively gives you probably a bit more. But the way that they've been able to shift formations and find the same success has been really incredible.
I guess I just hijacked the narrative discussion. Okay, so we're talking Seattle versus LAFC. Fine. Okay.
So here's my safe bet. Buy a USMNT jersey with Roldan on the back. Don't put a number, and Christian or Alex will play there for the next 10, 12 years. And you could just continue to use it. So Seattle's been phenomenal. They're fun in transition. They can be dangerous. A lot of different ways. They obviously score off a set piece to open up the scoring here. Seattle are great. You guys have gotten that out. Before we move on, I got to ask, are you worried about LAFC?
Not worried per se, because they've had one of the hardest schedules in the league, and they've done it. They've had it without Vela. They probably still have a DP slot that I assume they're going to use this summer. And the other thing is, like, Bob Bradley has a history of getting players to improve over the course of both their careers, and so like I don't think that this is. Like, I'm not worried about LAFC not being a playoff team, but the past 3 weeks, they have had defensive breakdowns that are very reminiscent of 2020. You know, against Houston, it was just falling asleep after the Baird goal. Against the Galaxy, it was, you know, Jesus Murillo getting stripped, trying to be cute, playing out of the back late in the game when they were being pressed. And, you know, last night it was Marc-Anthony Kay just getting suckered into a completely unnecessary foul in the attacking third by Joao Paulo that eventually led to giving up a set piece on, you know, a set piece goal. And like that, LAFC right now are not good enough to get away with that. And you're especially not good enough to get away with that against the Sounders or in a derby against the Galaxy with Chicharito red hot. So I still think that LAFC are going to end up being one of the better teams in this league, but they clearly need to make some adjustments both in terms of the roster and in terms of their mentality on field, because look, they were supposed to be beyond this at this point. They have the experience of, you know, setting a supporter shield record and going out sort of ignominiously in the playoffs. They have the experience of making a deep CONCACAF Champions League run against a legendary, like the biggest clubs in Liga MX. And that same group is still here for the most part. And they are still kind of tripping over themselves in these pretty high stakes regular season games against the Sounders. And like, if there's a worry, it's that.
Yeah.
It's not talent. It's that.
And they're getting beat in the boxes. If you look at where, you know, sort of those defining moments are, LAFC are fantastic between the 18s, 18 to 18. They're still incredible. And the issue is even defensively, you know, they were creating all those moments where they're pressuring Seattle and really giving them fits in the first half, but it's not translating to being goal dangerous in the box. And I'm not sure Carlos Vela is going to fix that entirely, right? Because he's not just necessarily, he doesn't always even really operate in the box. He's a guy that's going to play sort of in and around and outside it. So they got to get a little stronger on both ends, because even if you look at defensively, and I thought it was a little bit telling that the two late substitutions were both outside backs. Tristan Blackman missed his mark, I think, on the Arriaga goal. And then again on the back post ball to
Brad Smith.
Yeah. In the end. So I think they got to sort out being a little bit dialed in the back. And it's one thing to get guys forward, and that's one thing that you know, LAFC is always going to be able to do. But they've got to win more moments in the box, because a team like Seattle, and it wasn't even Rui Diaz this time, but it was the outside backs. It's usually Rui Diaz. Yeah,
it was, they couldn't handle Brad Smith and Alex Roldan.
Yeah, so that's starting to be concerning for LAFC, because that's where games are won and lost. It's obvious.
For LAFC, the schedule doesn't get easier. They got a red hot Rapids team this week, and then NYCFC the week after. But they do get to go home. Vela obviously coming off the bench in this one, so fingers crossed for them. It gets better for Seattle.
Let me ask you this, David and Kalen. So over the past few years, the past half decade, really, we've seen Seattle make a big midseason addition, get red hot, and then ride that into the postseason and become, you know, one of the best postseason teams that we've ever seen in this league. It feels like LAFC have a chance to do something similar, right? Is that what you're expecting from this group?
I think they'll get back. I mean, I would expect LAFC to be there near the end. I think the other, we haven't even mentioned his name, but Rossi was just almost invisible in this match. It was almost at the end of the match, I was like, forgot he was on the pitch, which is not characteristic for him. So they've got to figure that out. Vela getting healthy. I think this team will sort it out. The thing for me was, I was looking on the other side with the Sounders saying, all right, well, should they be concerned that they're firing on all cylinders this soon? But then you think about it and you're like, oh no, Nico's coming back. Steph Fry's out 4 to 6 weeks, so he should be back. You start to think about adding more to the pieces to the puzzle. Freddie Montero's given depth. I think he's going to get a bunch of starts and some goals this year. So I think the Sounders are flying. Yeah.
For LAFC.
And different goals, right? Their goal should be, it sounds like, to win the Supporters Shield, where LAFC probably more focused towards looking towards Cup.
Yep. For LAFC, I don't think it's going to come externally, but I think they're going to get better. I think Kim Moon-Won getting healthy is going to help them a bit, as well as obviously Vela coming back and getting healthy. I think for this team, getting better is getting the pieces you have to play better together. It's not who's going to come in from the outside and save us, is my expectation for LAFC, but who knows?
The only other thing I wanted to add was LAFC tried playing Latif more. They sort of matched up man for man and put him on Smith, because so much of Seattle attack still comes through that left side bombing forward. And I understand the idea of continuing to move around Latif because he's just such a good player, but I still think LAFC is a far better team with him in the middle of the pitch. So I think finding a way to get him back to that spot is going to be important for them. I think Vela coming back and taking that sort of right wing spot again will allow that.
And to be clear, LAFC making a big move this summer is contingent upon them finding a way to either loan out or sell Brian Rodriguez, who still does technically occupy that third DP slot. I just kind of assume they're going to get that done. I think this team is still under construction, to be honest with you. And they're certainly playing like it.
Doyle is going to go stand outside the Camp Nou and not allow Sergio Aguero to sign the deal because he's ready for the Sergio Aguero.
I really want to see Kuhn in MLS. I really do.
So now, can we talk about contenders or pretenders?
Yeah, here we go.
Can we play our game? Let's get the game show music. That's my game show music, which that was fairly accurate.
That was a very weeby moment right there.
Yeah, there you go. dad joke. So now we've got three teams. We've talked about most of them, so I'm going to start with the new one that we have not mentioned yet. NYCFC, they draw Toronto 1-1. They had what looked like was going to be a 2-0 lead and then wasn't called. A bit controversy as the Alex Bono's punt went off the back of Jesus Medina in the goal, and it was claimed that Jesus Medina attempted to get in front of the ball. He jumped, so I don't know how you could say he didn't try and do that, but whatever. Either way, NYCFC's been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. I think they've got the second or third best goal differential in the league as well. So I ask you guys this. Tate Castellanos re-signed for a 5-year deal about a week ago. That was the big question mark for them coming into this stretch of the season. It was whether he'd stay or go, and he is locked in for the long term.
That doesn't necessarily mean he's staying, though, does it?
Nice. He's going to be sold in 2 months after I say that.
Well, he's not going to Palmeiras. Okay. I assume, from everything I've heard, part of this deal is like, we'll get you to Europe, to the right club in Europe when the right offer comes in, and we're going to take care of you in the time being, but okay. We're not selling you to Palmeiras.
Okay, that's big.
And let me ask you this. Is he currently part of an MLS Cup or Supporters Shield contender or pretender in NYCFC?
I'm going to say contender. I'd probably say more for Cup than Supporters Shield. I just, you know, Maxi hasn't been playing. I think he comes back. He can be a big part of it. The other missing piece as well is Eber. He's going to be coming back potentially sometime this summer. Haven't looked lately to see what his progress is like, but if you add him to the mix, that's another big one. I mean, it's a tough place to play. Also, it always presents, you could ask Alex Bono about how difficult a place it is, as the ball on set pieces just bounces up in your face. And, you know, I think, you know, Medina puts it away and there's just much more alert on set pieces. It's just a dangerous proposition always. So I think NYCFC, you know, I think they're right around it. I wouldn't put them necessarily. I still think New England is sort of right at the top for me as the best team in the Eastern Conference so far this season, with room to grow. But I think NYCFC is a contender. Sure, I'll put them in that category.
Yeah, they're not an A-tier contender, right? It feels like their ceiling's a little bit lower than even like Toronto. I mean, Toronto, they're kind of a mess right now, but we know that they're going to have Pozuelo back, and he's literally the MVP. We know what Soteldo is. Well, we know from his wonderful time at Santos what Soteldo is, and we've seen what Josie can do in the playoffs. And there are obvious questions about a team like Toronto because, again, they haven't looked great. They look like kind of a mess. But they were kind of a mess for 70 minutes in this one. They said, all right, screw it. We're just going to hit long balls and beat the hell out of NYCFC's back line. And they did that, and they got a point on the road doing that. And I don't think NYCFC have the ability to do that. And then NYCFC just don't have a lot of depth. Like if Tati Castellano is not going to score a goal a game, they're not going to win a ton of games against good teams. And then you know, Collins went out injured early in this one, and then Chanel went out injured late in this one, and they don't have a lot of answers beyond those guys.
Well, they have Ibiaga, who's one of the better backup center backs, and they have James Sands.
I mean,
not to cover for the full season, but
Sands can really only play center back if they're playing right with that back five or a back three, and he's very good there. So you're right, but now you're talking Ibiaga, who is a career backup, and Sands, and then Vuk Latinovic, the rookie out of, I think, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, maybe?
That doesn't feel Panthers.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a contender's – yeah, right. That doesn't feel like a contender's back line. Medina has been a little bit better this year, but he's not a high-end lead-your-team-to-silverware type of DP. I wouldn't be surprised if they had a much nicer season than what I expected coming into 2021. But it doesn't feel like they're at that A tier unless there are a couple moves made.
I picked them out of the playoffs, so it seems like, yeah, I'll be eating crow, which I'm happy to do at all times because it can be quite delicious if you put the right seasoning on it. I'm a big rosemary fan, but still question marks. As you said, Maxi Morales needs to come back, that center back as well. So something to watch. So right now we've got NYCFC. They are contenders. You both voted for them.
Contender adjacent, I guess.
You could try and combine contender and pretender, but I don't have the brain space to do it right now. Let's move back out west to the LA Galaxy, who beat Austin FC 2-0 at home, as Doyle mentioned earlier. Probably their best performance of the year. The most possession they've had. The rotations in the attack were pretty impressive. Efer Alvarez gets the start. Sebastian Legette gets a goal. Carlos Harvey, a pretty good performance for him. This felt like a step forward for the LA Galaxy, and obviously they've gotten a ton of results already this year under Greg Vanney. So Doyle, are the LA Galaxy contenders or pretenders?
I think they're pretenders. Like, this is not to say they're not going to have a very good season, right? They're clearly going to be in the playoffs. I don't think this is a team that's going to take home silverware. I just don't. I think the back line is in central midfield is still kind of kind of questionable, and I haven't seen enough in the attack outside of Chicharito, and he's not going to score 40 goals this year. So they're a much better team. This is going to be the first good Galaxy season since like 2015, but they're not. I don't think they're contenders.
Kevin Cabral made his debut as well off the bench in this game. He's had quarantine and all that stuff to go through. The young DP out of France, who hopefully will add to that attack. So we got one vote for pretender. Kalen, yeah. Your favorite club in MLS. You're always behind them. The LA Galaxy are the contenders or pretenders for you?
I'm going pretenders as well. But I think the fact that this is even a question mark at this point in the season is a huge success, and probably why Vanny has an early shout, maybe behind Brian Schmetzer as coach of the year. And you look at the way that this team has been playing. The other part of it is just like, we've wondered what the Galaxy were, what direction they were going to go, right? And a part of, I think, their early season success, which has been really positive, is one, Operation One, getting Chicharito going, right? That's the most important, huge investment, big expectations, massive profile. Can this club become relevant again even? And it was like, answer one, absolutely checked the box already. Is he going to be able to carry this throughout the entire season? I think there's a chance. I think just based on the way he is moving and his fitness, and we joked about the penalties, and it's exactly because the ball is stopped. It's a very different skill than the way he normally scores goals, which is movement in and around the box, and he does that better than anybody. So I really like that part of it. And then the other positive, which Joel also mentions in his article, which you should read, is they've had to use young players. Vanny has had to use young players to give minutes and to give some trust to them. And whether it's been Ephra, whether it's been Dunbar, there's been a number of guys that have gotten Saldana. There's Araujo had a really nice ball in behind, and those guys are getting not just meaningful moments that can kind of just help them contribute right now and like keep the thing afloat, but they're developing. You're beginning to see, Araujo has a rough game a couple weeks ago, and then now, you're starting to see him bouncing back from them. Ephra has shown good moments before, but now he's getting moments from the start. So those are things where you can see kind of what Vanny has done in the past, whether it's Osorio or Marky Delgado or other young players that have developed under him. You can begin to see maybe a path forward for young players for the Galaxy, which you definitely couldn't say you'd had in the past. So I think it's actually, I still think they're pretenders because I think there's issues in the back. They're giving up goals. I think they've given up, they've scored a lot of goals and they've given up a lot of goals, which when I think of like the Sounders, yes, they're scoring goals, but they're like basically, I don't think they've given up a goal from the run of play this season. So it's basically just a completely different formula for me to get to the status of contender. But the idea that they're on a path to doing that is a huge positive for them.
It feels like 2015 TFC. It feels like, okay, this is, and obviously there are some differences just in terms of how Chicharito plays versus how Giovinco plays, but it's an A-plus tier DP going out there and putting in MVP performance week after week and leading this team that is otherwise flawed, but just like elevating the whole thing and not just creating a foundation, but like creating a path upwards. And it took, TFC team didn't really hit contender status until the middle of 2016. And then they were awesome from the middle of 2016 right up until, that trip to Guadalajara in the second leg of the CCL final in 2018. But I don't think you really get to skip rungs on that ladder. And this is, I think, probably the hardest one to take. And Galaxy fans have been waiting a long time for their team to take it. And the fact that they've taken it so quickly is so promising. And I know that Galaxy fans are going to listen to this segment and be so offended that we're not just immediately handing them their sixth MLS cup. They're going to be so angry at us.
Well, they know it's classic coastal bias. You guys right. Don't watch the flyover countries. You don't care about LA. Nothing matters to you guys. You just care about the big market teams in Houston. So forget this, cancel the season. LA Galaxy are pretenders officially, as spoken by Matt Doyle and Kalen Carr. And then we've got one more to finish
wait
up.
Wait a minute, well, wait a minute. You coward. Where do you come in?
I'm the deciding vote. If you guys disagree, then I decide to vote. I am King Solomon in this scenario, although naturally, obviously, David Mela. But I am King Solomon in this scenario, and I don't have to cut the baby in half because you guys decided the same way. So let's move on to another club out east now, CF Montreal, who are sitting on 8 points. So they are tied in the standings with teams like Inter Miami and Atlanta that we've already spoken about, kind of sitting right behind those top two spots in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, a devastating loss right at the end against Atlanta on the road, but they were able to beat Miami in the middle of the week in a 5.5-hour game, which was pretty fun to watch. So, Kalen, CF Montreal, are they contenders or pretenders?
Oh, I want to disagree with Doyle here, just to make you vote, so you can't stay on the sidelines anymore. I'm gonna go pretenders. I just think it's too tall a task, and there's too many teams in the Eastern Conference that I think are going to find their footing. We haven't even talked about Columbus yet today, but you know, they're near the bottom right now. I think 5 points from five matches. Who would have thought that? But I like this. I like this Montreal team, and I think they are also taking steps forward. You know, they do. They're not an easy team to play against. I think, you know, I like the pieces that they've brought in. Mihailovic, I think, has been pretty good. I always like Kyoto. I think he's dangerous always. They're solid in the middle. You know, Piet and Wanyama, these guys are solid players. I don't know. I think that they're progressing, but I think they're maybe benefiting a little bit more from some of the, I guess, you know, false starts or short or poor starts from some of the Eastern Conference teams that have themselves and Inter Miami a little higher up in the standings than they probably would be otherwise. So I'm just going to have to say, yeah, not quite for me.
Doyle?
Sorry, I'm removing a cat. Yeah, they're pretenders. Like they are clearly better than they were last year. The Kamal Miller trade has been very good for them. I know he had a rough moment a couple of weeks ago, but he's been very, very good at that left center back spot. And Wilfred Nancy is getting more out of Camacho and Kiki Struna than I ever thought he would. He's also done a better job than Thierry Henry did of getting guys into positions to succeed. Like Samuel Piet is not playing as an attacking midfielder this year, so he's playing a lot better. Like this is all kind of like pretty straightforward, and that is like the first thing that I'm looking for. Just being hard to play against, and they're not the hardest team in the world, but like they have sort of leveled up in that regard this year, and that is good. They still don't create much. You know, they scored 6 goals in the first 2 games, and I think 4 of them were legit bangers. And I kept saying, like, this is great, but like, you're not going to score 2 bangers a game. Eventually, you have to start manufacturing repeatable goal scoring patterns, or you're going to start dropping points and getting shut out. They've been shut out 3 of the last 4 games. Like, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You finish.
No, it's just like,
man, you guys vote for everything together. You go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say the good news is their next 3 matches are against Cincinnati, Chicago, and DC. So, I mean, you would think that those are a chance to really.
Mason Toy is rushing into the training room right now saying, get me back. This is Goal City right now.
Yo, my guy Bjorn Johnson, he had that nice brace last week against Inter Miami. And like those were the types of goals that Montreal need to be able to manufacture. And shout out to Bjorn, who of course is a big fan of my cats. So yeah, they're big fan of his too.
Kyoto, I think, went off hurt against Atlanta. So there seems to be a bit of an opening. There are a lot of options in that team, whether the quality is there for each of them is not, but they've gotten through the Zachary Brogiard injury pretty well as well with Bahia at right back. So it's been interesting for Montreal, but it doesn't matter. You guys can turn off. You don't have to watch the rest of the season. Kalen and Doyle have already finished LA Galaxy, finished Montreal, but NYCFC, come on down. Enjoy the rest of your season. You are contenders. You are the winner of our game show, and I didn't even know that was how it was going to work, but that's how it worked out for you guys. And since we're already on a roll, we're already making predictions. Let's keep it going. Because Anders wants to know your early Landon Donovan MVP picks. We've seen about one-fifth of the season, I believe. So based off what you've seen.
It's okay. We do this every 3 weeks anyway.
Extrapolating out to where we go. We got to re-up our golden boots. We got to re-up our MVP
picks. I think
MVP
I already did
picks.
The coach of the year. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So your MVP pick, Kalen, I want you to go first.
Wait a minute. I want to clarify. Are we saying who has been the MVP of this first 18% of the season, or are we saying based upon this first 18%, here is how we are predicting who will be the MVP at the end of the season?
Okay, here's the animosity of the show. I just said that, and while you guys were being so witty in your heads to make jokes around what I said based off what you've seen, but extrapolating out for the rest of the season.
Okay.
Who is your early MVP pick for 2021? Okay. So, Doyle, because you asked the question, you have to go first now.
Chicharito.
Okay. Do you want to give a little more? Is it just he scores a lot of goals in the Galaxy?
He scores a lot of goals, man. And it's not only it's not just the goal scoring. It's like having an active, engaged, and really sort of like positive center forward, a guy who's runs, whose movement is just going to create space for everyone, and then whose leadership sort of trickles down from, you know, Sasha Kljestan's been in the Champions League. Victor Valdez, he's won everything there is to win in MLS. And like these guys are feeding off of Chicharito, but so is Efra Alvarez. So is Cameron Dunbar, you know, so is Adam Saldana and Julian Arad. So like having that effect on top of having, you know, putting up the numbers that he's been putting up. Again, I don't think he's going to score 30, 35 goals, but I do think he's going to score between 20 and 25, and he's going to be like, this is going to be the first good Galaxy season in a long, long. So yeah, it's Chicharito.
We made a joke about it off the top, but it was an okay penalty kick attempt, got saved. He still then scores a goal later in the game. That doesn't happen last year. And yeah, he's a high level DP. He's supposed to do these things, but it's still good to see for LA Galaxy fans. So Chicharito is Doyle's pick for Golden Boot winner, as well as early season MVP. So when this falls off a cliff, Doyle is out to sea alongside him. That's good camaraderie. I think Chicharito will play harder now because he feels that level of commitment from you and follows you.
But that's the thing, man. He's been playing so hard. Like that's what's striking about him and this entire Galaxy team. They are emptying the tanks every single game. And even if it's not the most beautiful soccer to watch at times, it still becomes watchable because of that level of intensity. And after the past half decade that the Galaxy have had, I mean, those fans are right to crow a little bit after this past month.
Everyone knows if you're not first, you're last. That's the way it works. Kalen, MVP pick, early one. We already got your coach of the year. Who are you looking at for Landon Donovan MVP?
Well, I have the courage enough to say my prediction before, which was Zellerian, which isn't looking so great right now. And I think I picked Joseph for Golden Boot because I cannot pick against Joseph ever for scoring goals. And I don't regret that, but it's not looking likely right now unless he just really goes on a tear. So I think I agree. Chicharito has probably been the standout performer so far, but I don't think the Galaxy are going to get to a supporter shield level or near the very top of the conference or the league. So I think that may hurt him. I think he may get the Golden Boot or clearly the front runner right now. I think these awards usually go to a team that is at the top. And I think Seattle right now looks like the odds on favorite for that. And with the absence
Pick Christian Roldan.
Well, I love that choice, but I'm going with Rui Diaz because as much as I love Christian, it goes to the goal scorer usually, you know, it goes to the numbers. Like it's all about that. And Rui Diaz has 5 right now. You know, even last night at the end of the match, there was just a moment or two where he looked a little angry, maybe that he didn't get one. It's kind of one of those, you feel like LAFC are vulnerable and there was one in there for him at some point and he didn't get one. And he's kind of like leaving the field with a bitter taste. That's important. And then I think, you know, Seattle has been a team that maybe hasn't always gotten the accolades necessarily individually when it comes to these types of awards. I think
they haven't earned them. Kalen, they have not earned them. They have played regular seasons repeatedly. They have played them in like third gear, fourth at the most. The one time that was different was the second half of 2018 when Lodero had a real shot at best 11. But even that was like the second half of 2018. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted. You continue.
Okay. All right.
I think the caps lock is broken on Anders' computer, by the way.
Or, that's just as distracting to me. Yeah.
We don't do this live on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube, but trust me, the way Anders talks in the group chat or in the side is basically just a YouTube chat, and whatever random person from across the world is sending it in. So, Kalen, continue your pitch for why Seattle's the best soccer team in the world.
No, I'm just going to read Diaz. I wish I would have taken him in our striker draft. I made a huge mistake, and so yeah, I regret that. And so I think he's got a shout for it.
He's going to miss a month at Copa America.
Well, you hope it's a month, right?
Right. For Peru. Yeah. Shout out Peru.
Yeah. Vamos Peru. That's how we have to go with this show. So you guys have put yours in. Mine is Carlos Heel. Kalen mentioned, I think you both did with NYCFC Convo, that right now New England's probably a class above everyone else in the Eastern Conference. They don't score goals. He's already got three assists. Maybe if they had goal scorers on the team, it would be even better. But I picked them preseason to win MLS Cup. I think they're on their way to contend for trophies all year. And he is the best number 10 in MLS right now. You've got Lodero out. Vela's not playing if he even gets in that conversation. Zelarayán has been in and out at times this season. Carlos Heel's been that guy. He dominates the field for New England. He makes everything happen. If he's healthy for a full year, which we've never seen him in MLS, but if this is finally the year, I think he's got a legitimate shot to get into this. And as you said, it's going to be an attacking player. It always is. So he's got that ability. Even though the Revs maybe will rely on their defense to get to that spot, it's going to be him that's going to be in the MVP voting at the end.
What's your belief level in Adam Buxa being that, because like he came in at the end of the game last night against Columbus, who are dire right now, and he got the game-winning goal and made a really nice run, and he does that. He gets into good spots. What is your confidence level in him ending up being like a, you know, 13 to 16 goal type of scorer? He's got two in, I think, five games or two and six now.
I'm going to say what I'm high on is the chance creation across the field for that team. As Tejan looks like he's getting better, I think Torrenston will hit. It's just he's just got into this country and is getting.
Trusteson?
I have no idea. Okay. I just went with a name and went for it. Teal Bunbury can still be effective. Yeah. I don't know what I'm getting from Gustavo Bo. I love the fullbacks on that team when Bai gets forward, as well as Duan Jones. They've got depth there. And then with Maciel in midfield now, it feels like you can commit more numbers forward and you can be more aggressive offensively. So I believe in this team creating enough chances for him to be an ineffective finisher and still get to 12 or 13 goals over the course of this season.
I don't think he'll get that high, but I think if they get three or four guys between, you know, 7 and 10, that will make up for it. And I think they're going to I think Bruce is going to constantly just play and drop and play and drop and shift the players. And, you know, when it's Bunbury gets a hot streak, you know, hopefully here it'll be Buxa's turn to maybe get back into the team and get a run of games. We've seen Gustavo Bo can get goals in bunches when he starts feeling it. But yeah, I agree with Goss that it's really about kind of the system kind of behind the strikers. And then you ride the hot hand of whoever can get a goal or two to get a result in a match. And that'll be it.
Caleb, watch your hands. You knocked your J-Lab mic so we could hear it. So just keep going forward. But Doyle brought up Buxa coming off the bench, a 1-0 win for New England on national television over Columbus. This is the last team I want to get into here. Are you worried, either of you, about the Columbus SC crew for 2021?
I still think they have too much talent for this to go completely into the toilet. And they just, like, this was their ninth game in 38 days. And I think it was 6-19. They're nursing injuries at basically every position except goalkeeper. You know, Jossie hasn't really looked like himself since that shoulder injury. Zelarayán missed this one. They've had injuries to a couple of the wingers. Obviously, losing Aiden Morris is terrible for them. And Artur, he had, I think, offseason hernia surgery. They've had to juggle the bet. Like, it's been it's been kind of a horror show and a nightmare.
He had the dreaded double hernia surgery. That's no joke.
I
still
do not
smashed
want
one off the crossbar, actually.
Right. So, like, I still think they have too much talent for this to go completely bad. But I do, like, they've got to be looking forward to that Nations League break that they have in a couple of weeks. And certainly getting a full week of rest at this point is something that they badly need, because they don't look anything close to the type of team we thought they were going to be. They don't look anything close to the type of team they were in that first CCL series, and then even the first leg against Monterrey. They were very, very good in that game. And I think that's the real Columbus Crew. I don't think we're going to see this version. I don't think is the real version. But they're clearly not going to be a team that, as you said, David, at the start of the year, I think you were saying that they had a chance to be one of the best teams in MLS history. That's gone. They're not going to be that.
Absolutely. They are last in the league in chance creation as well as goals for this season, which was not what we saw coming.
You could hear Caleb Porter the whole match just being like, move it, move it. It was like a broken record, right? Because he's just trying to speed up the possession, because they have the patterns are still there. They're playing it, but they're just not moving the ball quickly enough. Maybe that's the tired legs. And then they're missing that moment of improvisation, which is, you know, Noah Zelarayán. And then you would imagine Kevin Molino is going to be able to provide some of that as well. So I agree.
And Pedro Santos.
They're going to get back there. Pedro Santos is there, but he's not the guy that's going to do it. We've seen in older versions of the Crew, when he's asked to really carry the load of the chance creation and the playmaking, that it's not a good outcome. But if you put other players with that responsibility, and then he's allowed to kind of get more advanced on the field and get on, you know, create opportunities or be a role player in that way, he can be really valuable. But I think they're also really solid in the back. Room had a really good save in this one.
And
they had a really nice, I think the center back pairing is still one of the best in MLS, so I think they'll be in good shape. It's just tough early start to the season for them.
Highlight of the Goss family viewing party on this game, my dad says that guy's been around a while for BWP, and then 5 minutes later, but he's still got that speed. So big BWP fans in the Goss household, apparently. Let's go the other end of this, not the 36-year-old, but the 22 and under players that were eligible and had big performances this week. Gianluca Busio getting the start at the 6 as SKC dominated Vancouver. It was an impressive performance from them. But a huge moment in this game, Graham Zusi coming back from injury, getting the start at right back in honor of Joel Wiebe, one of the biggest Graham Zusi and SKC fans out there. He got married on Friday. That is why Andrew Wiebe is unavailable for us right now. And Graham did this all for Joel. So Joel Wiebe, congratulations. You are forever connected in this moment with Graham Zusi. If I could say it a fifth time, I would. And congratulations, Gianluca Busio, on a big performance. My favorite player in MLS, Cole Bassett, got the start this week after coming off the bench and leading the comeback last week against Minnesota. And Doyle, what did I text you, that he's Nico Lodero now?
Yeah, I mean, he only scores bangers, right? And this was, if you haven't seen this goal yet, make sure you look up Cole Bassett.
Please stop. Cole Bassett's goal. My dynamo. Oh, boy.
Dynamo. Big changes for Tab Ramos from midweek to the weekend. And I think we talked about it on the last show, but for these teams, if you go for a win and get it, two ties are not as good. Like, I think he'll take 3 points at home from SKC on Wednesday night, and the loss in Colorado sort of will roll off their backs in Houston. And that's what they're going to need to do to make the playoffs. So a tough one that game, but Colorado starting to roll, starting to put up goals. Kalen, you wanted to mention Moses Nyman, a big week for him Thursday night in the win against Chicago. And then the first half on Sunday.
Yeah, he was great in the match against Chicago. I hadn't seen him play a lot in the past, just sort of heard about him. So I watched him pretty closely and just love the way he moves and gets around the pitch. Super energetic for a team that's needed some energy as well. I thought they looked a lot better actually in the match against Orlando, just didn't get kind of the result that they deserved at the end of it. And Nyman had a good first half still, and that one created a pretty decent chance where he was able to get outside and play a ball. I think it was to Perez, but got dropped at halftime. I think just more of a tactical shift to get on Gressel and try and attack more down the wings. But
it might be legs too, because he put it in a full
17.
Come on,
bro.
Man, you want to protect the kids from muscle injuries, especially on that DC United team.
Yeah,
I mean, they have for 10 years now, they have had nothing but soft tissue injuries, and that only got worse the first couple of months of the season. But I agree with you. I love Nyman. He has that sort of Darlington Nagbe style press resistance, where it's like if you're coming at him, he has that ability to just sort of like glide right by you. And then, like, unlike Nagbe, he doesn't want to play square. He will find progressive passes. It reminds me actually of Jackson Ewell a little bit. And like, those are two of the best deep lying sort of registas in this league. And like, that is the bar. That is a bar that I think that Nyman can hit. There are a lot of good, you know, 2003s in this league. Guys like Pepe, Cowell, Caden Clark. I think Nyman has the highest upside out of all of them. And one of the things that, I mean, he's going to have to figure out how to impose himself defensively a little bit more. We saw that against the Fire, and I think we saw that a couple of times against Orlando City. But they're like, once he gets that part down, I'm not going to say there's no ceiling, because there clearly is, but like, this is a very, very high level player.
Can I give a quick little shout out to I thought Gutierrez from the Fire. I think he's 17 too, also, right?
Yep.
Really young.
Yep.
He was good. Hit the post. I think he might have hit two posts, and got brought off a little earlier than I would have liked, actually, in the Thursday night match. But
I mean, he was their best player.
Yeah, he was definitely their most goal dangerous player. And anyway, so a lot of good young players. And then Eric Williamson, I know he's not super young, but you were mentioning the position of players that can kind of like carry the ball forward and be goal dangerous, had a really nice assist. And I think he played like more deep lying position this past weekend.
That's who you should compare Moses Nyman to, because Eric Williamson went out there, put this performance against your boy Jackson Ewell, Matt Doyle, and then came off the field and tweeted out the meme of Michael Jordan from The Last Dance saying, and I took that personally, with no reference point. But I believe the reference point was he was not selected to the U.S. Olympic qualifying team. Jackson Ewell was the centerpiece of that team. A lot of people thought Eric Williamson could have helped that side, and he dominated this game. Guys, this is MLS pettiness. This is what we do, and I love it.
It's fantastic. And he had, like, I hope Eric Williamson keeps taking that snub seriously or personally, because it's like, he was the best player in MLS this weekend. He should win player of the week. He was absolutely incredible playing that Diego Chara role, but also being like a super dangerous progressive passer and ball carrier and getting two assists. That first assist that Jimmy Chara goal he set up, it's absurd. His ability to just cut the first guy and then accelerate and then release the pass, perfect weight, right timing to cut almost the entire Quakes defense out of the play. He has turned into an afterthought 2 years ago into like a really, really special player and like centerpiece for this team.
So two Americans that played D-mid over the last few weeks that didn't come into the season as one. And when we talked about the depth chart behind Tyler Adams, I think coming into the year, Doyle, you talked about everyone wanted Aiden Morris and James Sands to have big years to fill in for him, you know, behind him. Leon Flock, three big performances for Jose Martinez going out suspended. He did it all early season on the side of the diamond and now as the D-mid, and then Eric Williamson filling in for Diego Chara, which has never happened before in Portland Timbers history. And I think Christian Paredes is out hurt as well. So whenever Chara is out, Williamson's going to get an opportunity in there. It's pretty exciting to watch those guys go after it. Shout out to Patrick Klamala, who came on for the New York Red Bulls in their loss to Philly, a young DP for them who looks pretty exciting. And then bad news right now for Red Bulls as well as USMNT fans with Aaron Long going off with an injury. And that one, we don't have full status yet, but he had to be carried off the field and rolled off the field for them to continue playing and then carried out into the locker room is what people said in the stadium. And that's the worst thing that anyone could see. And he's having a resurgent year, so tough to see for that. And everyone waiting to hear what happens with him. Shout out to Nawajoa. I don't know. Maybe not. Put up 115 points, Captain Gonzalo Higuain, in the Extra Time Fantasy League. So getting it done. Big performances, you guys. Nawajoa, contender or pretender?
Clearly a contender. I mean, the man is putting up points in the Fantasy League.
There you go. Kalen's like, I'm not even going to pay attention to this joke that David's going to go with. Let's move to the mailbag. Brian Rice on Twitter said, I know you love to play your favorite parlor game. Which team should trade for Danny Royer? It kind of looks like no team's going to get the option after he got the start this week and has now worked his way back into the team. But can you come up with a Royer trade in which Rebel in New York get a center back in return? I want to hear everyone's best trade. It can include Gam and additional players as well. Has anyone got one? Nothing at all. Does anyone have a center back in MLS that could be available? Here's the thing. Alan Franco went off hurt this week. We already mentioned Chanot and Kayans as well. I don't know that there are extra center backs out there in MLS to be available for teams. Does anyone come to mind for the New York Red Bulls?
You think Tim Parker's available?
I don't know that that's how that works. I will say this.
There's nobody. You have to develop your own. You have to draft and develop your own center backs in this league, or you have to get lucky by going on the international market and making a good signing. And this is we don't know what Aaron Long's injury is. It looked really bad though. And this is it's going to be tough to solve this from within the league from making a trade, especially because like it was pretty clear that. There's not like Danny Royer doesn't have a ton of trade value right now. They shopped him all winter and they didn't get any takers. And so to answer Brian's question, no, there's nobody who fits that bill. At least that comes to mind.
All right. Well, how about this one? David Wright brought up something that we forgot to bring up. Clutch performance from David Wright at third base as usual. Breck Shea's disallowed goal thanks to the offside butt. This is one of the weirdest offsides call I've ever seen. Gonzalo Higuain is laying inside the goal, but with half his body out over the line. And the ball that Breck Shea shot hit off of his butt, just quite plainly, went in the goal and got called off. All right. That's what we do now.
It's a men's league goal.
Well, it's a men's league except there's non-goal.
There's no offside in men's league, so that would have been clean. We would have let that go.
Do you think that Breck Shea would be able to do damage in the Bowery Premier League 7v7s on weekends?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the amazing part where they were saying he was just training last year in Fort Lauderdale, right? With the USL team.
Yeah, see Fort Lauderdale. Give them respect. You know, they've got their own letters.
We're available. We came off a devastating loss over the weekend, 3-2. Dropped 3 points. So we're in the market. Any MLS players that want to retire, come home. Come home to men's league.
Do you have any center backs on that team that the Red Bulls could use? Because
no, we don't. I'm throwing them under the bus.
Wow. And that's how you use the media as a manager. You call out your players in the media. You get a response. That's very Frank Lampard of you, Kalen Carr. I'm proud of you. That's going to end well for you, I can guarantee. All right, on that note, this was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys, for joining me. One day we'll be partners in soccer, but today it was nice to just host a podcast all together. Of course, check the call up out tomorrow, and we'll be back on Thursday. I think Charlie's going to join me, and we're looking for some mailbag because we got our next Club and Country show coming up. So any USMNT, Costa Rica, Mexico, Honduras, Canada, CONCACAF, Euros, whatever it is, any national team questions you guys have, send it over to us at Extra Time on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com via email. And thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.